Okay, this hour we'll continue chatting with Dr. Peter Breggin about over-medicating psychiatric pharmaceuticals. We'll also take your phone calls this hour on Coast to Coast AM. By the looks of things, all the lines are almost all lit up. Skype's open, though, at George97313. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. Peter Breggin with us, and of course, a couple of his books, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions, great book, and Medication Madness, of course, The Role of Psychiatric Drugs in the Cases of Violence, Suicide, and Crime. And we're going to take your calls this hour as well. Peter, one of the strangest things, and I want to ask you about this, that I've ever encountered happens to be people laughing. If they all laugh differently, they laugh at different things. But what in the world is a laugh, and what causes it? Because what causes the human body to come up with that funny sound?
Boy, that's a good question, George.
I'm baffled by it.
I'm not sure animals can laugh. I think it's maybe chimps, but
or a hyena.
I suspect that's not a laugh. I don't know. Huh. I think laughing has something to do with the perception of some contrast with something that somehow bamboozles us, I think, or shows us the impossibility of things.
Is it induced in the brain?
Well, I think it has to be a part of our genetic makeup, so we have the genetic capacity for it, but it's our social relationships again. You know, everything is about us being in relation to others and each other. Freud thought that laughing was a form of anger, very close to gritting your teeth, and it was like a threat, but I think it's much more a relief of tension. I think it's a very big way of relieving it, relieving tension, and I think that's very, very good for the body. But that's a good question. I don't think anybody's got an ultimate answer.
It's incredible. And then on the opposite end of the spectrum, what causes crying? I mean, I understand emotion, but when you look at a human body, the human being, and if a person is crying, tears are coming down his or her, you know, eye ducts, and they're sobbing uncontrollably. What causes that?
Well, it's
weird.
It's a huge question. I think a lot of it is about human beings signaling to each other. What helped us survive in signaling to each other? When we laugh together, we're close together. When we laugh together, we're letting go of the anger that we may feel toward each other. When we cry, we want empathy, we want caring, we want to show we're suffering. It enables others to move closer to us. So I think that they can be viewed in the most understandable way and how they function to bring us together. And I think laughing brings us together in a way that lets go of the conflicts and the absurdities and the ridiculousness. And I think crying brings us together in a way that says we're vulnerable and take care of each other.
All right.
From the top of my head. It makes a little sense.
They both are strange phenomena. They really are.
They are.
Let's go to the calls. They're lining up here for you, Peter. East of the Rockies, Tony in Rochester, New York. Thanks for calling, Tony. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, George. Good morning, Dr. Peter.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hi, Tony.
First and foremost, I just want to say that I absolutely love your show, George.
Thank you for having me on.
I've been listening since the Art Bell days, and it's completely and totally enriched my life. Put a lot of things into practice that I've heard here by some of your guests, and I truly believe it's made my life a lot better.
Excellent.
Fuller life. Dr. Peter, question. I really don't know where to begin. This is a subject that is very near and dear to my heart. It's a touchy subject as well, because simply due to the fact that there's such a stigma associated with mental illness and or / emotional disorders. I was raised, plus I come from the Balkans. I come from an Eastern European family. And the men in my family are, they don't believe in psychiatry. They don't believe, you know, they're old school, literally right off the boat. You know, a man's man, I guess you would say. You know, it took me 25 years. I take Prozac, okay? And what I've been diagnosed with PTSD, obsessive compulsive disorder, depression, anxiety, the whole alphabet. And I respect what you're saying. I really do. And I might be partially speaking from a place of fear, because there have been three or four occasions in my life since I started taking the Prozac that I stopped. I moved out of state, insurance reasons, whatever. And I can tell you that I went through the withdrawals my life was just, I went crazy. I mean, I wound up in a hospital. I started self-medicating. I turned to drugs, alcohol and drugs to help me cope and deal, with my issues. Now, what I want, I 100% is it overprescribed? Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think you said it, George, earlier that, a lot of people want that quick fix.
Yeah.
When I tell you that I tried absolutely everything, Dr. Peter, for 25, 26 years, I tried everything else besides taking the medication. And once I did take the medication, I can honestly tell you that, my problems did not go away. No, I did not become a zombie. No, I did not become emotionless. But it did ease my pain, and I started feeling, I guess, quote unquote, like a normal person. You're not writing off that schizophrenia or dissociative disorder / multiple personality disorders or PTSD or any of these things. Do they have merit? Are they real? Or are you saying these are basically just, made up things by Big Pharma and, the medical community? Do you believe in these things?
You're bringing up many, many things. So let me try to take a few of them, all of which are important, okay? First, it does sound like you're going through severe drug withdrawal when you come off the Prozac.
Right, right.
And what that indicates is how bad the drug is for your brain. So it's harming your brain so much, your brain changes, and then it can't recover right away from all that's happened to it. So you experience, terribly painful emotions. You have to come off a drug like Prozac very slowly. If you've been on it for a year, you're going to take, maybe a month or two or more. If you've been on for 6 years, you better take 6 months or a year. People vary a lot. I've written a book, by the way, called Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and it's aimed at both doctors and the consumers, the folks taking the drug, psychiatric drug withdrawal. But the withdrawals are bad. And you yourself have to decide for you about the Prozac, much as you would about smoking marijuana or drinking alcohol. What is this trade-off? And with Prozac, what happens is a very insidious, this is all the antidepressants, a very insidious loss of loving, loss of sex, loss of passion. You hardly realize it's happening to you. So just be aware of that as well. So, just things for you to think about. And now about all these diagnoses you mentioned. Diagnoses, George made this marvelous point about the proliferation of drugs. Well, why do diagnoses proliferate? In order to justify the drugs and in order to justify psychiatry, not psychotherapy, or very different. Psychiatry and psychotherapy, very different. Psychotherapy is a human-to-human way of helping people. Psychiatry is a medical profession that's drugging people out of their minds now. But
the symptoms are real, right?
The symptoms are very, very real. Human life is tough. If you've been traumatized, all kinds of things that happen to you. I mean, I deal with people who... their room when they're in it with me is filled with hallucinations. life is tough, and our brains and minds respond to it in lots of different ways. But what causes the stigma you mentioned is all these awful names. The first thing I do when a child comes in and the mother hands me the child's latest psychological testing, maybe it's a sweet little 10-year-old girl, and I do this purposely. I read the first paragraph to myself, and I look at the girl, and I say, well, just wait a minute now. I'm reading about you in this paragraph here in this psychiatric evaluation. It doesn't say how sweet your smile is. It doesn't say how well you're doing in art.
Doesn't accent the positive at all, does it?
Yes, and I throw it away, and I say, I don't want to hear all this nonsense. I want to talk to you about all the great things you're wonderful at and help you be more wonderful at them, and help your parents support it, and above all things, learn to love life, above all things. And the drugs all suppress our capacity to love, our highest capacity, any psychoactive substance. Even I believe even nicotine, which is perhaps the most horrible to come off, is maybe the least distorting of our minds, still interferes with our finest sensitivities. People get irritable and angry more easily often, and in between cigarettes. Life is about having all these feelings. And the reason I don't diagnose people, but rather talk to them about their lives, is it's very stigmatizing to reel off those diagnoses. I'd say to you, my God, man, you've had so many diagnoses, you must have the most creative mind on earth. I mean, they look and try to categorize it, and it takes six categories.
But you would say, in his case, Prozac, that he should be off that as a doctor?
No, he has to make up his own mind about that. I mean, I have patients sometimes who come to me and they don't want to stop taking their drug. I work with them. It's their lives. I try to help them. And most of them, really all of them who stay pretty much, come off their drugs, but it's because they're learning better ways to live and the drug interferes. The drug interferes with love, creativity, sensitivity, motivation. All the good stuff is dampened. And as this gentleman said, he had less pain and less suffering.
I guess it would be malpractice if you gave them a placebo when they thought they were taking a real drug in a non-study, right?
Well, George, I mean, malpractice, you know, psychiatrists get away with everything. But I wouldn't want to do it because I don't want to ever deceive the people who come to me. I want them to know everything that comes out of my mouth.
Yeah, all right.
It's genuine,
I get it.
Above all things. But certainly, you know, I'd rather give a kid a pink sugar pill and tell him this is going to make him more comfortable and happier than give him a drug. But no, I'd much rather tell the child, I want to help you become empowered. Look, one boy once walked into my office. His mother warned me in advance that he'd attack his last psychiatrist.
He attacked him?
Yeah, his last psychiatrist. So the kid walks in. The parents are very nervous. The kid's very apprehensive.
Oh boy, and you're ready for him to jump on you, right?
No.
All right.
And he sits down. I say, I hear you attacked your last psychiatrist. First thing's out of my mouth.
Did he admit it?
He said, yeah. I said, that was brave. I said, brave, but very dangerous. I said, attacking a psychiatrist is like biting a tiger or kicking an elephant. You can't win, but it's brave. I want to teach you how to be brave without getting hurt.
You got along with him.
Oh, my God, immediately. And empowered him. It's empowering. People need to find their strength. These kids that are so disturbed, they're fighting for their lives. They're experiencing conflicts at home or in the foster care. They've been abused and then gotten into foster care. Or they're depressed because no one's there to love them when they need it. I mean, whatever is going on in their... Something goes on in the lives of people, and they need to learn they can handle it and understand it and surmount it. That's what life's about.
Let's go to first-time caller, Tracy in Pennsylvania. Hey, Tracy, you're on with us. Go ahead.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Good, Tracy.
Well, you know, I've been trying to get a hold of you forever and a day, I swear. But It's finally good to talk to you. It is. I've been listening to the show since Art Bell's been on. So.
Thank you.
But my question to the doctor is for about 3 months now, I have been feeling just not myself, lackluster, depressed, and I can't pinpoint it. Usually I can, but usually around this time of the year, I'm bubbly because, you know, I mean, I got grandkids and
oh yeah, this is the moment. These 3 months, October, November, December should be the best.
Exactly. And it's like I'm not myself. And I don't know, maybe he can suggest something that I can do to, because usually, I mean, I don't take any type of drugs. I don't take, I won't even take an aspirin for a headache. So,
how old are you?
49.
And any changes in your life? First of all, you might want to check if you're physically ill, because a genuine physical illness, if you've got an underlying flu or a virus of some kind or something else. Hypertension. So if you are unaccustomed to getting depressed at this time of year, you might just think about getting a checkup, but beware, they'll recommend the psych drug and just say no to that. Now,
I don't take
something that. Going on, something going on that's kind of different drug. With your, are you married?
Yeah. Well, I've been with my girlfriend for 12 years.
Is something going on there? Does she want to get married? You don't? Does she want to go to one place for the holidays? Opposite. You to another? Yep, go ahead.
Actually, it's the opposite.
You want to, she doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, you think that's getting you down at the holidays?
Well, no. I mean, I proposed to her, 10 years ago?
Is she still considering it?
I don't think. No.
Do you love her?
Not really. You know, but...
Do you love her very much?
Yes, I did.
How much do you love her? What kind of words would you put on how much you love her?
With all my heart. I would do anything for her. I'd bend over backwards for her.
And did she know that? Well, did she have a feeling you love her with all your heart?
We have been having some issues and some problems, and I've done everything I can to try and fix it and just can't pinpoint how to fix it. And I don't know if that's it or whatever, but, you know.
Got about 40 seconds, Peter, before
all
the
break. Well, I'll tell you the secret to life. I'm going to tell everybody that's listening the secret of life. It's impossible to be filled with love and sad, depressed, anxious, crazy, or any other thing negative. That you, if you can find your way to open your heart to her in a new and special and full way of loving, and don't withdraw because she is, if you can open your heart, you're not going to be feeling depressed. And then maybe she'll respond differently.
I think you've pinpointed why he's a little down during this season.
Yeah, I think it's very possible. And how long did it take? The psychiatrist would have taken the exact amount of time to give him an antidepressant.
And it didn't cost him anything. We'll be back. And next hour, Hans Christian King joins us with his book, Guided, as we talk about the spirit world. Looking forward to that. And welcome back with Dr. Peter Bregan. And let's go right to the calls. Dave in Seattle, Washington. Hi, David. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you doing tonight?
Great, Dave. Thank you.
So I wanted to say, first off, I really appreciate what you're talking about, Dr. Peter, and bringing up how medications are being way overly given and stuff like that. I'm a Iraq veteran myself, suffered from PTSD and gone through all the psychiatrists and all the medications that they give and stuff like that. And then it finally clicked to me that there's something that wasn't right and something's kind of missing for me. And ended up starting doing some outdoor activity type stuff. And trying to find another aspect in life to try and put myself kind of back on the right track. And one of the things is I found out hiking was one of the greatest things for me to get out and change my point of view and my aspect in life.
Great.
And ended up creating a nonprofit out of it, doing it and doing it for the veteran community locally where I'm at. But I wanted to see kind of where your standpoint is on the whole idea of moving away from the drugs, maybe having them seek out counseling so they can get the issues out in the open, and then seeking an alternative therapy as in hiking or fishing or something to actually activate the mind versus drugging it and pretty much covering up the issues.
Well, Dave, I'm just with you 100%. I'm fond of saying this. It's not even a contest between drugs and therapy. It's between drugs and all of life.
Mm-hmm.
What gives meaning to life is finding something we love to do, finding people we love, finding activities, believing in a loving God, whatever it is that connects us to this experience in a positive way. And I think of love as joyful awareness, something that just makes us happy to do, to know, to be with. And you found the outdoors, and it's then connected you to other people, and you provide a service to other people. So it's a marvelous, marvelous example. And I think that the goal of good therapy should be to empower people to not only understand where their problems come from, which most therapists do, but to really help people find what they love, to empower them, just as you did. So that's a great story.
Is that like self-medicating, basically, when he finds something that he really enjoys?
No, medicating is poison. I really have to get this idea.
No, but self-medicating. Isn't self-medicating,
it's self-help.
Yeah.
But it's never really just self, George. It always involves something outside ourselves. We don't get well, or which is not even a good metaphor, we don't prosper in life by being focused on ourselves, only enough to get the rubbish out, maybe. We prosper in life by, as this man did, finding something to love, to do, and to be. It's really the key to life, and it's not new with me. It's the Judeo-Christian story, to love God, love one another. It's what most great philosophers have said who had any sense. And we're missing that completely in our lives today, that what we really need to do is to love others, give to the world, appreciate the world. It's not about finding happiness by some inner process. It's an outer process.
Bonnie wanted to know if you know something about some drugs. One would be Lyrica, is it?
Lyrica.
Lyrica? What do you think of that? And the other is gabapentin.
Well, they're kind of similar drugs in a way, I don't like either one of them very much, and I just think you need to talk to the doctor about why you're taking them. They have profound effects on mental functioning. It's somewhat dose-dependent, but both drugs are suppressive of the nervous system. Both are used at times to control pain, but the question is, in controlling pain, are they also suppressing yourself? Google. One of the great things about the world now is you can Google these drugs and see if you're having any of the adverse effects.
Yeah, that's right.
That other people are talking about. In general, if you can deal with emotional or physical pain without drugs, you're going to do better in the long run.
Jim in Lincoln, Nebraska. You're on with Dr. Peter Bregan. Jim, go ahead.
Hello, George and Dr. Bregan. I have to say, I thoroughly enjoy when Dr. Bregan is on, and a guest like Dr. Bregan. I have two quick points. The first one, I just wanted to say how spot on Dr. Bregan was when you asked him about basically the current events that are going on.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, Dr. Bregan said, I don't know, what is the answer to bring people together who, I don't know, we're unwilling to talk, and then Dr. Bregan went off on that beautiful rabbit trail, and he was honest. He just said what he believes, whether anybody
that's him
or not. And I think that is the answer. Dr. Bregan said, you know, what is the answer? That's the answer. We just need to be honest with each other and not, you know, suck each other in the jaw afterwards. That's all. And we've done that in America forever.
Sure we have. Why can't people, Peter... As Jim is saying, why can't people just get along when they discuss things, even if they are opposed to things, rather than scream and
well,
Hollard.
The values are as far apart right now as I think they genuinely are. It's very threatening. A lot of Americans feel that that we're losing our country. I've written a book about that, George, that I don't talk about much. I've written a little book called Wow, I'm an American. God, I would love more people to buy it. I'm not known for that kind of writing.
But when did you write that?
I wrote it when the Obama administration started.
All right.
I wanted people to know that there's a greatness in America that was there in the beginning, and that you can actually use those principles to love life, to live life, to prosper. Principles like responsibility and freedom and love and very much showing appreciation to whatever power you believe governs this universe, gratitude. So if you fight for freedom, you express gratitude, you take responsibility, and you love with all your heart. And it's a book about where that is in America's history, a look at the lives of founders, and how you can put it into your own life. But these are values, as I speak them, that to other people comes to their mind, things like racism, why the founders owned slaves. Yeah, I write about that. It was horrible. But they said things. They taught us things that liberated the slaves, ultimately. People hear what I'm saying now, and they think, well, I must be insensitive. I believe that people can just really live life, and that we shouldn't be focused on being oppressed. We should just get free of oppression in our individual lives to begin with. So the values are different. And we're teaching helplessness to our people now. We are literally teaching people the opposite of what's good for them in their lives. People feel helpless about the government. They feel helpless and in need of the government. They want everything taken care of. That breeds anxiety and dependence, and it's not what the country's about. Now, I've never talked this much to so many people about this, but it's very dear to my heart, and I hope I can just inspire people to regain that sense that being an individual in America is still possible, to be a loving and creative and powerful individual if you study and think and work or do whatever is necessary, is very possible in America. And that's the best message. And the message that was being given as the alternative was, no, that's not true. We're suffering. I'm suffering because I'm a woman. I'm suffering for this reason. I'm suffering for that reason. Well, sure, there's a lot of suffering in a lot of the roles in our country. Well, then join together to do something good and positive about it.
Lots of people want to get a hold of you, Peter, via email. Is it attached to your website?
There is an email on the website. It's just me and my wife, and it could take a while to get an answer because we're just two folks, and you know how many things I'm trying to do. So
absolutely,
I can't promise to be really good.
And you're taking a vacation.
Go to my website because I've got so many books and articles about all the things I talk about. You can find so much information on Breggin.com, BREGGIN.com.
Next up, we have Rich in Wyoming. Thanks for calling, Rich. Go ahead.
Hello, George. Hello, Peter.
Hi.
Hi.
I've come to a conclusion as far as this is concerned. I've been listening to Coast to Coast since 1990. And
thank you.
Just lately, I've decided, why don't we try some of the things that you guys say about supplements and stuff like that. I suffer with PTSD and several other things like that. I've been on the medication before, and I know the numbness that I feel when I'm on the medication, and I didn't like it. So I started supplementing it with vitamins, turmeric, things like that, that would make my brain healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Since I've become doing things like that, and my brain has become more and more healthy, the happier and happier and more control I have.
That's great.
And are you doing things differently in your life, too, that could be bringing you more satisfaction and happiness?
Well, it is, but I think the thing is my brain is becoming more healthy, and because of that, I'm becoming more positive because I have the ability to cope with the things that are coming my way.
Well, I deeply believe that healthy eating, and there's a lot of differences about what healthy eating is, but I think the healthier we eat, the better, and I do think the science tells us that the more vegetables we eat and the more natural things like turmeric that we use, the better off we're going to be.
I'd rather take that than pharmaceutical drugs anytime.
Oh, my God.
Anytime at all. Did you ever get to the point, I'm getting personal here, but did you ever take pharmaceutical drugs, mood-altering drugs for whatever reason? Oh, boy.
Well, I drank too much bourbon until I met my wife. That was 35 years ago.
That's self-medicating.
I was never somebody you'd call an alcoholic, but, I'll tell you something more important than that and more important for your audience to hear. I was chronically depressed my whole life until my 40s, George.
As you were going to medical school, everything.
Oh, through it all. I was better at helping people than helping myself because I really had never experienced a loving relationship, even though I thought about it and knew about it. And I actually think, George, I mean, this is probably the only audience in the world I would say this to. I really think that God had these other things for me to do first, you know?
I think so, too.
I think I was supposed to be angry and motivated and driven to stand up for truth and rightness. And then after a while, he had pity and said, and now comes happiness. And he overcame my personal problems and Ginger's and just threw us together and said, you're meant for each other. Now make it work. And that's the beginning of what I would say was when I became happy, was having a love relationship. It's the center of my joy, but I've always gotten satisfaction out of work, out of sports. I was a pretty good athlete as a kid. I've always gotten satisfaction out of doing things, but real happiness, I think it comes from loving relationships for most of us.
Well, what happens too is no matter where I go, Peter, or various events around the country, your name comes up from a lot of our listeners who I see face to face. You've helped a lot of people that you probably don't even know.
That's wonderful. I do hear that, George. It's hard for me to even integrate it into my being, the numbers of people that come up to me and call me and tell me about other people that have been helped through my words or my books. And
it's amazing.
You know, George, I'm 80 years old now.
You don't act it, and you don't look it.
It's a joy to hear this and to have you bring it up. Thank you.
You've become Benjamin Button. You're getting younger and younger. Let's go to Mike in Florida. Hey, Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, everyone. I like to agree and disagree with certain things he said.
Sure, absolutely.
My wife is a board-certified child psychiatrist for many years, and I'd like to relate information I got from her about the field itself.
All right, we've got a couple minutes to go, Michael, so go ahead.
Okay. 80 million people are getting psychotropic drugs. Millions of people are being helped by these drugs and are able to live decent lives. This is a fact. They're not all going crazy and insane because of the drugs.
You have no basis to call that a fact.
Well, let's hear them out, Peter, and then we'll let you react. Go ahead.
Now, if you have a mental illness or you feel sick, you go to a board-certified psychiatrist for help. Chances are you're going to be helped. Where the problem is, and I agree with the doctor here, there are severe problems with these toxic drugs, there's no doubt about it, is that there are other specialties like GPs and pediatricians who are issuing these drugs to their patients with no knowledge of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand these drugs. My wife has to study these drugs. She goes to conferences. She's tested every few years on the limitations and advantages of the drugs. These other doctors don't have to do that.
No.
And they issue these prescriptions, and this causes you a lot of suicide and the craziness that's going on.
All right, let's get Peter to react to some of that only because time is limited. Go ahead, Peter.
Well, quickly, I disagree with every single thing he said.
Everything?
Oh, yes, everything. I want to go down the points.
Well, you did say in some cases some of the drugs were bad, but go ahead.
Yeah, no. First of all, child psychiatrists are doing more harm probably than any profession in the world today that I know of, other than maybe some secret kind of cult. They are taking people, little children, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, all of whose problems revolve around the adults in their lives. Or somebody, maybe it's not even in the family, their problems, maybe it's the bus driver that abused them. Maybe it's the teacher who doesn't like them. Maybe it's mom who's just, you know, trying to raise three kids and the husband is gone. When we see children and diagnose them, we're blaming the children for their lives that we've given them. It is so wrong, and it's the fundamental principle of modern psychiatry, what didn't used to be 40 years ago, modern child psychiatry, it's you diagnose, you drug the child. They don't even often talk to the parents. I do the reverse. I might say hi to the child, give them a lot of encouragement, give them some suggestions, and I say, and your mom and I and your dad and I, we're going to work together and things are going to get better. Because when the parents come to grips with things, then the children get better. And the other thing he said, that it's the psychiatrists who know all this that do so well. No, they're the most arrogant. I do a lot of malpractice work, George. I see malpractice cases come across my desk every day for a few minutes. Sometimes I'm working real hard on them, sometimes not so much, but I do a lot of malpractice work. It is mostly involves the psychiatrists because they're the ones who will give you 7 drugs because they're so smart. Your GPs generally don't give so many toxins at once. So I even agree with them about that. And
okay, Peter, thank you so much. We got to run. The clock has got us, but we'll be back with Hans Christian King in a moment.